Hi and welcome to this week's edition of Off the Charts. I'm Mark Simon and we're in full NFL draft prep mode. So today we're joined by two of our NFL draft experts from our operations department, Nathan Cooper and John Todd. They previously helped oversee the production of our Football Rookie Handbook, which this year will be a free website accessible to anyone. And it's going to be awesome. Hey Coop. Hey John. How you doing?
Hey Mark, how's it going?
Thanks for having us. Glad to get the process going here.
This will be fun. We're going to do a deep dive on four NFL draft prospects. And the way that we're going to do it is we're going to talk process. We're going to talk the process of evaluating every facet of their game. So this is one that is very much for the scouting intense community. And we hope that there are a good number of those people tuning into this episode. And there'll be plenty for you to learn if you're not familiar with some of this stuff as well. So before we start, we have reports for 350 guys that combine our scouting data and our statistical analysis, typically 350. Just how comprehensive is our process?
Yeah, it's extremely comprehensive. This year might be the most comprehensive yet. Obviously, we've had a lot of guys that have been in the book the last couple of years, but we started with over 800 players. And we basically are keeping track of these guys throughout the entirety of the season. We're assigning these guys to our scouts for them to watch, write these reports, before we narrow it down to that 300, 350, 400, wherever, you know, we end up with. And it really starts over the summer. We're gathering names, taking the top guys, and then that list basically grows all the way through the season. You know, we're adding guys even, you know, as of a month or so ago as well. So it's a continually growing process. Guys are always going on and off the list, you know, throughout the season to try to narrow that down. But one of the big things too, we brought in our fellow ops team members, Jordan Edwards, Jeff Dean and Ben Herkich this season to help focus on certain conferences, certain regions, so that all five of us can really get a good look at everybody before we finalize each report and narrow this list down.
Awesome. And then that accounts for more than what the NFL draft will have, right? NFL drafts, 7 rounds, 32 guys per round?
Yeah, usually about 250 or so guys in there. So, you know, obviously there's tons of undrafted free agents and everything that gets in there. And there's always guys that, you know, they're blowing up going into their senior year and maybe they fall off, or guys that weren't really well known going into their senior year and then blow up. So that's why it's a very, you know, growing process and ever flowing throughout the season.
So one of the key things within this is what we call lists of critical factors and positional factors. Critical factors are determined positionally, and positional factors are obviously determined positionally. You have different ones for quarterbacks, running backs, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, wide receivers, etc. There are usually three critical factors and then up to around a dozen positional factors. And these are the things that you're looking at. John, explain what that is.
Yeah, years ago when we started our scout school program, something that we put on every year throughout the season with our new interns coming in, Matt Manicharian, who's not here today, let us all in on the scouting processes that he used when he worked with the Saints and Browns throughout the NFL, made a lot of connections, obviously, with other scouts. This is a process that the vast majority of the league uses. Everybody kind of has their own different style, but specifically for this, a huge part of that is the breakdown and then the hierarchy of traits by position. So each position has three main traits, critical factors that we call them. And then, like you said, up to 9 to 12 or so other factors that we deem positionally important for that, for each specific position. It kind of varies by group, obviously. Still very important positional factors, but some like play speed, for example, just to use that one. It's a critical factor for some positions like cornerback. It's deemed a positional factor for some like receiver, tight end, and running back. Maybe not as critical as it is for a secondary player, but still very important. And then it's not a factor at all that we grade for defensive tackles, which I think makes sense.
Right. And this is all scaled, right? There are numbers that match up to essentially how you value someone.
Yeah, absolutely. We have kind of two different things that we go with. We have the 1 through 9 factor grading scale, which is essentially our verbiage of how we the vocabulary that we use to talk with each other. So a 6 is a good level player. Whenever you use the word good, that's something that we teach everybody to try to get on the same page of what good is in the NFL. Everything bases off of that. 5 is sufficient. 7 is very good. You can go on and on with the verbiage there, but it all correlates to your effectiveness at the NFL level, holding your own against top competition, doing so effectively at a high level. You're going to have some inconsistencies as it goes up and down from there. So that's the factor grading, the trait grading aspects. And then your final grading aspects are for how we do things, it's role-based grading, which can get into a little bit as well. But that's something that a vast majority of the league uses role-based grading. Another way of doing it is round-based grading. there's kind of varying thought processes there, and everybody kind of does it a bit differently, uses different numbers and things. But essentially, a vast majority of the league uses role-based grading, where instead of saying this player is going to be a first or a second round player, get drafted in that range, we're projecting what their role is going to be on their NFL team. So whether you're going to be a low-end starter, whether you're going to be a role-based sub-package pass rusher, if you're going to be a three-down starter, you're going to be elite-level player, just a reserve on the practice squad. So grading things in that range as well. Those use decimal points. The factor grades are just 1 through 9.
And you want guys that are generally sixes, high six.
If you've got a team of sixes across the board, you're winning a lot of games in the NFL. That's always what you're aiming for.
Your superstar players are your sevens and higher.
For your final grades, a 7.0 and higher for your final grade is going to be your elite Pro Bowl, All-Pro type players. And so the correlation between the factor grades of 1 through 9 and the decimal point grades of a 6.3 and a 6.8 and a 7.1 aren't a true average moving over, but there obviously is a lot of correlation between the two.
I noticed it's close. So
it's close. Yeah.
How much film do you guys watch in all?
Yeah, we require at least 4 games on a specific player per report.
Whole game.
I mean, obviously, as much as you're watching that specific player, but yeah. And then obviously, when you're looking at 800 players, obviously, you know, not one of us is doing that, but as a collective whole, that ends up being a lot of games. But there's plenty of occasions where we can dive in deeper than that. Quarterbacks, for example, you're likely going to watch more than 4 games. I watched 9 on Trey Lance last year. So it just kind of depends on the player. Other players, they maybe transferred in from other schools. Maybe they played different positions previous year. It's always good to look at guys at, you know, different spots, because maybe the spot that he's playing right now isn't going to be what he plays at the next level. Maybe what he played last year on a different team is actually a better fit for him. So little things like that you need to look into as well. And sometimes you just don't have a good feel for a guy after 4 games. So maybe you throw in on another 1 or 2 and just get a better idea of a specific trait or something. So it sort of depends on the player, the position, the situation, but no less than 4 games for every report.
A lot of it goes into the position as well in terms of their usage. You have an offensive lineman, vast majority of plays you're going to be seeing traits that you're looking for that you're going to be grading. It's very easy to see play in and play out for an offensive lineman, getting different aspects of plays, obviously different schemes, different defenses that you're facing, but by and large, they're going to be making contact and doing something on every play. You get a safety, those are positions where you're going to be needing to watch a lot of games just to maybe get your ball skills great. Maybe they don't see the ball come their way for a number of plays, for even specific games across the board. So a lot of it is, like, for an offensive lineman, you can get a good feel for a player after 2-3 games, and then you just kind of round it out. For some positions, you need to watch just enough to get to maybe have everything set except for one grade, and you need to look for that specific trait.
And there are things that you're obviously taking into consideration here, like quality of competition and like who they're going up against, in particular for a lineman. So I said we were going to take 4 players and spend a good amount of time on each of them. We're going to take some pretty good players as a means of breaking guys down. We'll start at quarterback. Could be the first quarterback taken in the draft, Kenny Pickett of Pitt. Now, you take all the information you compile, you eventually give him a grade. There's a lot that goes into that. I want to work up to how we get to the overall grade by looking at the components first. And your 3 critical factors for quarterbacks are accuracy, decision-making, and mental, and clutch performance. So how do you come to a number on accuracy?
When you think of accuracy, a lot of people think of completion percentage. And for us as data collectors and even evaluators, it goes a lot deeper than that. We're not only looking for the ball to be caught, but, you know, there's other factors in play here. Was it catchable? Was it on target? Did he give the receiver a chance to make a play with it after the catch? Also factoring in short and deep accuracy. So, you know, the short passes, the intermediate passes, and then deep down the field. Everyone obviously expects passes to be completed at a higher rate whenever you're in the shorter areas of the field. But can this player also be accurate and on target as you get deeper down the field as well?
Are you taking notes as you're watching this? Like, what does your notebook or your computer screen look like as you're watching?
Yeah, I actually take notes, pencil, paper. I have all the factors written out, and I'll jot notes down next to each factor as I'm going through all the games here for every player.
Old school. Awesome. I like it. What about decision-making?
Yeah, decision-making. Obviously, we're looking for the ability to make smart decisions, but you're also looking at the mental processing. How well does he read the field? Process what the defense is doing here. The ability to play with poise in the pocket. Is he flustered under pressure? Does he sense the pressure and still hang in there? But then again, doesn't make the bad decisions as well. Throwing with anticipation. Is he always waiting for the receivers to come open before he pulls the trigger, or is he throwing them open? So playing with a rhythm and timing, getting the ball out before the receiver is out of his break, essentially. So it's there, you know, as soon as the receiver turns around, the ball is there and he's not waiting for it. So there's a lot of factors that really go into the decision-making, mental processing aspect of it. But those are some of the biggest traits we look for.
Now, you're a former quarterback, right? So how much does that help?
It helps a little bit. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of different things. Quarterbacks are tough. You know, I'm sure we'll get into it here. They're very tough to evaluate regardless if you played quarterback or not, but it definitely helps a little bit.
All right. And then the third factor, clutch performance. That's one, that's an interesting one, because in baseball, you get into a lot of arguments over clutch.
Yeah, there's a few things here that you can kind of look at. Obviously, you're thinking about the best quarterbacks in the game. How do they play on third downs? How do they play on fourth downs? How are they playing in the red zone, in the final minutes of the game when you're trailing? How are you playing on the road in adverse conditions, essentially? You have to be able to extend drives and put the ball in the end zone as a quarterback in the NFL. And really, a lot of those factors are the things that we're looking for to get this grade.
What are the numbers that you get there for Pickett's in those three categories?
Yeah, starting with accuracy, he's not always spot on with the short passes, throws a lot of the swings and the flats on the back shoulder, forces the receivers to, you know, have to adjust, stop the momentum before he really gets upfield. So don't love that aspect. Lacks a little bit of touch on the screens and the shorter routes as well. But looking at the deep ball, very good touch on the deep ball, drops the ball in the bucket, really money from like 25 to 35 yard range. But I do worry about the arm strength a little bit to get much deeper than that. So I had a 6 overall accuracy, but if you broke it down, I would have a 5 on the short and 6 on the deep. And then when you're looking at decision-making, I like his ability to make decisions. He works the field, rarely forces the passes into super tight windows and really taking too many chances. The majority of his turnovers really come off of like off-target throws or late throws. Does a good job processing the field, manipulates the safety with his eyes, holding him to one side before going back to the other side, and goes through his progressions to find, you know, the target who is open. So doesn't throw with a ton of anticipation. You'll see it a little bit on comeback routes. So I want to see a little bit more there. But overall, decision-making, I think, is a good level for the NFL. And then for clutch, last thing is a lot of fourth quarter comebacks during his time at Pitt. Made throws when he needed to. Got the football into the end zone instead of just settling for a lot of field goals. So I had that as a 6 as well.
You mentioned the manipulating the safety thing. I presume you're trained to watch that, right? Like you have to be, you can't just... I'm not necessarily going to be able to pick that up as I watch that, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Like if you don't know about that, it's hard to see that. And, you know, that's why we're talking about different systems and different schemes in the college game. I think we talked a couple weeks ago, Bailey Zappi at Western Kentucky, they're playing in an air raid offense. And they have a lot of first read, half field read type of plays where he's just going to catch the ball and throw it to his first open guy. And at the NFL, you're going to have a situation where you may know who you're going to be going to, but you can't always just zone in, you know, on that player and, you know, just look him down the entire way, because then you have other defenders that are going to be coming over to basically try and disrupt that. So being able to look the opposite way, knowing you're going to come back to the other side, is going to hold that safety in the middle of the field or even to the other side of the field. That way you have a little bit more open space down the field.
Now, there are 12 positional factors on top of everything that we talked about. Some of them we kind of went through. You mentioned short and deep accuracy, arm strength. Those are all pretty straightforward. But I'm curious, someone looking at this from a scouting perspective as opposed to a fan perspective, how do you evaluate leadership?
When we talk about on-field leadership, you know, you're looking at a few different things. First, how does he play in adverse situations? So this kind of goes back to the clutch part as well. Clutch and leadership can kind of come in together a little bit. But does he step up in those times as someone his teammates look up to? Is he always, what's his body language? Is he sort of dejected over on the sideline by himself when he is struggling or his team's struggling? Or is he a guy that's, you know, that's really trying to rally the troops and get him up and get him going? And then level of toughness and intensity. Is he a guy, without being reckless, is he a guy that's going to stand in there and make the plays while taking hits? Is he going to put his body on the line to grab that last yard and get a first down? Or is he a guy that's going to slide at the very end? That's things that everyone's going to see, and especially his teammates and coaches are going to see as well as being a leader on the field.
Okay, so there's an extra value to that beyond the statistical value of the yardage gained. So let's go to a positional factor that stands out for Pickett, his footwork. Explain that.
Yeah, aside from one of the more clear things to notice, you know, obviously, is he taking snaps under center? Is he always a shotgun guy? Footwork also, you know, it also ties into working the pocket, resetting your base. Talk a little bit about pocket awareness and mobility, being able to manipulate, maneuver, and work the pocket, staying away from the rush defenders. But something Pickett does really well is resetting his base. Whenever you're, you know, the awkward throws and things like that, where you're having to throw where you don't have a chance to step up, or you have to throw off a 1 foot. There's times where you have to do that. And that's another factor that we do grade. But there's other chances where, you know, if he has the chance to reset his base and make a clean, good throw, Pickett is someone that does that. If he sees a receiver come open quicker than expected or at the last second, instead of hurrying and try to throw it while having bad footwork, he's able to reset his base quickly and make a good, clean throw.
Getting the sense that you mostly like him, but maybe not completely like him. We'll get to that in a second. Do you do any sort of baseball? You have comparable player. There's always the scout says, okay, in his best, he's this guy. At his floor, he's this guy. Do you do anything of that sort for the NFL?
It depends. If something pops up in my mind about a guy I previously scouted, or maybe someone that he reminds me of in the NFL, I'll jot it down. But I don't actively seek out comparisons anymore. I did a while back trying to come up with guys and maybe what he can be at the next level, like you mentioned with baseball. But to me, it can get a little hairy. And sometimes you're almost trying to make it fit and trying to make it work more than it actually working. And, you know, maybe his measurables are the only thing that compares to another player. Or maybe a guy's throwing motion and mentality are what compare. But I think this type of stuff can really get misconstrued, especially, you know, out in social media, whenever guys are talking about like, hey, this guy compares to this guy. And then other guys are wondering like, you know, I don't know what you're seeing here. And sometimes maybe it's just one or two traits. And for that reason, you know, maybe I'll jot something down and keep that in my mind that like, hey, he reminds me of this guy, but I'm not really going to put it out there.
Yeah, you don't want to turn it into a hype fest. So for Kenny Pickett, we get to the overall grade. How are you weighing things for him? And then I guess, how do you get to whatever the number that you came up with for him is?
Yeah, there's a reason we have the critical factors and positional factors. John mentioned earlier, you know, the three critical factors are something that you have to have to play the position. If those grades are low, then it's really going to be tough to get a good grade, even if you have higher positional traits as well. The critical factors obviously carry a little bit extra weight. But taking everything into account throughout all of the factors is extremely important. And whenever you're talking about quarterbacks specifically, the grading scale is pretty straightforward in saying that if he has this many good or better traits in these areas, he's this grade. Or if he has at least this many sufficient traits in these areas, then he's this grade. So with that, you know, I'm right on that 6'6 and 6'7 border for Pickett. I think he's more of a win-with type of quarterback. Definitely has traits to play at the next level. I just don't think he's going to be that top tier talent that you see, you know, coming out early in the first round. You know,
the short pass accuracy a concern, and the deep ball, the arm strength, as you mentioned, concern. Just to articulate the scale here, we generally go from about 5.4 to 9. As you've talked about, the decimals matter. There are four different groupings from 6 to 6.9. Higher, the better. Low sixes are developmental guys, circumstantial starters, high-end backups. 6.5, 6.6 are your win with guys. That's if you look at last year's football rookie handbook. Guy that we had in the 6.5, 6.6 range was Mac Jones. 6.7 to 6.9 are your strong starters. We put Justin Fields, Zach Wilson in that class. You're putting Pickett at the low end of that class. And then 7 and up are Pro Bowl guys. Last thing, just to close this out, what's the hardest part about evaluating a quarterback?
I talked about it before, but college offenses don't, you know, always translate to the NFL. It's hard nowadays to find guys in college, honestly, at almost every position, being asked to do exactly what he's going to do in the NFL. You got to find the traits, you got to project those traits, and you got to try and see as many NFL-worthy plays as you can and weigh those slightly higher than the rest, basically. And something that you mentioned earlier as well, the quality of competition. Seeing players against competition that most resembles what he's going to see at the next level. It's great if he can throw for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions against Louisiana Monroe. But what does he do against the Clemsons, Ohio States, Alabamas of the world? And not to say that it always has to be the best team in college, but watching the best teams on their schedule. You know, so for non-Power 5 players, watching them against Power 5 teams, or non-FBS players, watching them against the top non-FBS teams, or if they have an FBS team on their schedule. Quality of competition is extremely important whenever you're trying to evaluate players, especially quarterback as well.
Certainly, you want to see guys that play the SEC as much as possible. Thanks, Coop. Let's shift to John. We're going to move to running back. We did a good job there talking about Kenny Pickett and his future in the NFL, potentially. Let's move to running back. We got a good one here. Kenneth Walker III out of Michigan State. John's done the work on him. There are three critical factors for running back. Let's run through those, and we'll talk about how Walker fares with them. John, how do you assess vision?
Yeah, vision is a grade. It's kind of like football intelligence, instincts. Those are some things that we look at for a lot of defenders, linebackers, defensive backs. It can be pretty difficult to see because you're trying to give a grade to something that's inherently intangible in terms of you're not always sure if it's football intelligence or instincts. Was it film study? Was it read and react ability on the field? So it takes a lot of slowing things down and understanding what they're sensing on the field in terms of vision for running backs. But it's essentially the physical manifestation of a player's ability to anticipate. For running backs specifically, it's their ability to anticipate defensive leverages, blocking flow within different blocking schemes, making split-second decisions to hit open running lanes, finding cutbacks, setting up and following blocks, understanding when a hole is going to open before it actually does, kind of sensing, like talking about defensive leverages, sensing when a lineman has control of a defensive lineman on one end. He's kind of leading him to go one way, but he maybe hasn't gotten him there yet, but you can sense that there's going to be a hole opening right behind him. So understanding when it's important to also just take what's given as well. Don't always sit back there. This doesn't mean you're sitting back there and dancing around waiting for a hole to open up. It's making a split second decision. If nothing's open there, put your head down and take what you can. So vision's a pretty difficult thing to put a grade to. It takes a lot of detailed understanding of what's going on with different responsibilities in different running games, but it's definitely it's our number one critical factor for running backs. It's something that can make or break a running back a lot at the pro level.
Not to make light of it, but it sounds to me like you're checking to see if a guy has ESP in a way.
It takes a lot of experience to play within different schemes. Yep. It's just a feel, which is a difficult thing to put a grade on, and that comes with a lot of experience.
Another of the critical factors, this is a scouting term that someone like myself or just fan watching might not be familiar with. Explain the idea of contact balance.
Yeah, if vision's the mental side of running back, I think the most important physical side of running back is contact balance. We'll kind of get into it. There's some positional factors like speed and elusiveness and different things like that, but probably the most important one for me is contact balance, which is big for any ball carrier, especially running backs, guys that touch the ball the majority of the time. It's your ability to absorb contact in traffic, bounce off defenders or blockers, just kind of foot traffic, and maintaining a low center of gravity, foot coordination, really essentially in the box when there's a lot of moving pieces going around and just being able to keep your balance. Different from power, we'll get into that later. Power is more delivering contact. This is your ability to take contact, stay upright, kind of lowering and minimizing your strike zone, being able to brace for contact as opposed to delivering it.
I'm not a football scout. I'm working on the baseball side for the company. I have to say, though, that evaluating a running back sounds like solving a puzzle in a way. And it seems to require, like, it seems like a challenge when you're trying to do it, because you're looking for certain subtleties. This is about much more than just watching live action game speed. This play happens. Oh, the guy got 3 yards. It seems like there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're just ball watching as a fan, which we enjoy doing as well, but when there's so much that goes into every play, it comes back to the charting aspect of what we do, where we ask all of our interns coming in. It's kind of something that we all understand as full-time employees here with the charting operation and the auditing operation, of understanding that, yeah, there's a 3-yard play up the middle, but there's so many different aspects that go on from a charting aspect and then from a positional aspect of all 22 players on the field for each play.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it with quarterbacks, but you guys are using numbers too, right? Like the based on the things that everyone is watching over the course of the season.
Yeah, it's with a lot of these factors, we often use our stats as something of a cross-check. It's not something that we necessarily look to as confirmation bias for sure, but looking at things like drops, broken missed tackles, accuracy data for quarterbacks, we obviously track a lot of different things. It's something that can just kind of either supplement what you've been doing, or after the fact, it can help you understand why the grade that you put on the player maybe was or wasn't met. But yeah, the whole idea of the handbook the past few years and now the website, everything that's been going into this is the presentation of the eye test on the scouting side of things, and then the data right next to it. So sometimes it's going to correlate, sometimes it doesn't. That's kind of the beauty of it. That's the difficult thing about scouting in the NFL is they have so much data and so many scouts doing everything. And the best ones are the ones that are able to parse through everything, take both sides of that, and kind of figure out either which way to lean, what's important over others, maybe trying to circle back and understand why this player's stats are lower in something that you think he's very good at. But yeah, so it's not necessarily something that we look to during the process, but it can definitely be something that we either look at after. It can maybe give us pause, eyebrow raising, kind of give you a chance to look back for a second look at things, something like that.
Alex Digderman on the statistical side will probably be on at some point in the near future to explain that a little bit more. One other critical factor that you're looking at when you're evaluating running backs, and we'll get to Walker in a second, passing game impact.
Pretty straightforward. It's one of the more all-encompassing ones that we have, though. There are a few traits across the board for different positions as well that we have this for. Positionally, we'll split it out in positional factors into the different aspects of blocking and receiving, essentially. But this is just the single grade for running back's ability to impact his team in passing situations. So maybe you're a really good receiver and you're a really bad blocker. You have to put one number on combining how you are on third downs. We have this in other situations like pass block and run block. We have for like an all-encompassing block and grade, some aspects like that. But this is your all-encompassing on in passing situations. How are you going to impact your team?
There's a lot that goes into it for sure. So now the positional factors, how do you evaluate something like toughness? And just as an example, Najee Harris was an 8 last year, which is high end in that regard.
Yeah, toughness, again, kind of like vision, it's a really intangible one that takes some kind of other context to go into. It's a factor that we have for a lot of positions. You'll look across the board, there's a number of different positions that have toughness as a positional factor. And the definition of it's pretty universal. It's playing with grit, a husky disposition, regardless of your size, taking and delivering contact, coming back for more snap to snap, fighting through injuries, looking at things like that, guys that have either fighting through injuries or returning from injuries. A guy like Landon Dickerson last year is a guy who, as tough as they come, and he's had as long an injury history as there is, but just keeps coming back for more, plus with the way he plays. A guy like Najee Harris was a guy who proved in college and now in the NFL as well that kind of confirmed that. He's the definition of an every down workhorse. He doesn't come off the field, fights through injuries. He plays with a kind of a gritty disposition as well. He's not always kind of a dancer and a finesse player. He can work up the middle as well. Specifically to Walker, he's a guy who was definitely a workhorse this year. He's not a negative in terms of toughness by any means. He got a ton of carries this year. He just doesn't have the same body type and play style that a guy like Najee Harris had. So he's not going to be known for playing with like a gritty disposition. But yeah, so it's something that kind of takes in other context, maybe off the field and on the field to come up with that grade.
What are Walker's strengths and weaknesses?
So vision and patience are definitely what he's going to hang his hat on in the NFL. The grade that I gave for that is one of the highest of any individual factor grade that I've given to anyone so far this year. Really impressive player in that aspect. Because I don't think he's necessarily an elite athlete. I think a lot of it comes from his vision and patience. So his other strengths and weaknesses, his one cut change of direction skills, especially in zone running, definitely is able to plant and go really quickly, which combines really well with his vision. He sees it and hits it really hard. And then general traffic navigation, his ability to slalom through tight spaces, minimize your strike zone, ball security near contact, just the way that he moves through the box is really impressive. And then his weaknesses would be his passing game impact. I don't think he's necessarily strong in technique or tempo in passing situations. His pass pro technique isn't great, kind of leaves early in blocking check and release situations. I don't think he has the best explosion and long speed for running back. Not something that's a total detriment, especially when you have the other factors, but he's not going to break away and be a real dynamic player in that aspect. And then his power. So we talked about contact balance, the difference between contact balance and power. Power is more delivering contact and moving piles and things like that. He's got good contact balance and body manipulation, tight spaces and everything, but just getting squared up to, he's not necessarily somebody that's going to run over guys. He's not going to run through front seven players really well. He's more going to be bouncing off guys instead of delivering contact. So those are a few weaknesses there. But again, that vision of patience is going to be what carries him to success at the next level.
On our grading scale, where does Walker fit?
So because of those limitations on passing downs that I mentioned, not a great blocker, he's got sufficient hands, he just wasn't using the passing game very much, not really a dynamic weapon, a lot of check downs and things. That's going to keep him below that 6.7 true three-down starter level for me. So the 6.6, 6.5, I have him as one of the higher end of the 6.6s there, a top-tier first and second down player. He's going to be in the mix for one of our top running back spots, depending on how some other guys shake out in terms of three down ability. But yeah, I mean, a 6.6 is by no means something to look down on. He's going to be a really good player in the NFL.
All right. So it doesn't apply with Walker, but in looking at how you evaluate running backs, and it's a long list that you'll put out at the end of your process that we'll have on this website, our free website that's coming soon. You give a bunch of guys the same grade. They're going to be multiple guys. There could be multiple guys that'll be 6.6s. There could be five guys last year that were 6.3s, 11 guys that were 6.2s. How do you manage to put one over the other?
So for players tied at those final grades, we usually default back to critical factors first, because again, there, like we said, there isn't a direct correlation between the two, but if somebody grades critical factors, those are the most important, a bit higher than somebody else tied at that final grade, then we might default to that. Then we move on to other things like potential ceiling, how the report reads, what clearly, if we can tell that the scout who wrote the report thought very highly of the player and just had to kind of stick them at a certain role, just how effusive they were about them. It's a collaborative process we'll have near the end of it. And then, yeah, you get to the 6-3 versus 6-2. Running backs, a lot of times, are a dime a dozen. You hear people say that a lot. And so splitting hairs between a 6-3 and a 6-2 can be pretty difficult, which is why we go back to the role-based grading of things. You have your 6-3s are guys that are role-playing starters, essentially, guys that are going to be truly playing on every third down. They're going to make an impact on third downs. They're going to be playing in two-minute situations, essentially splitting carries just in a different role with a first and second down starter. A really good complementary piece. A 6-2 is going to be somebody who can play on all three downs and fill in, but he's maybe going to get a few package plays here and there, but he's mostly going to be spelling a true three-down starter. So it's splitting hairs. I know it's going to be something that we're going to mention here in a minute, but the dime a dozen thing, it makes it difficult to evaluate running backs. A lot of guys that have success in the league, so there's a lot of these finer details that make you have to split hairs with figuring out what they're going to be by their second year, which is how we grade everything, trying to accurately project all these different factors and what their role is going to be moving forward, to separate just the good in college, which there's a lot of, to the good in the NFL.
While we take a break here, let's talk about our NBA podcast, Playing in Space. Playing in Space is NBA focused. It's hosted by SIS basketball strategy analyst Henry Ward. The show covers the NBA through conversations on league-wide trends through a philosophical lens driven by insights derived from SIS's NBA data. From discussions of player and team performance to basketball decision-making theory, Playing in Space has you covered on all ideas NBA with weekly episodes. You can find our NBA team on Twitter at SIS_hoops, and you can find the podcast online wherever you get your podcasts, Playing in Space. We'll move on to talk about defensive backs now. We go to the other side of the ball. We've talked about quarterback with Pickett. We talked about running back with Walker. We've tried to give you a good perspective on not just the player themselves, but how we go about it process-wise to try and say, okay, this guy is a high-end quarterback, or this guy is a top couple of guys running back, why they may not be the best, where the strengths and the weaknesses lie, what we have to watch to figure that out. We're going to do the same on the defensive end. We bring Coop back. You guys typically grade and rank about 40 defensive backs, same scale as before, 5 to 9. Generally want your starters to be 6s, high 6s. We're going to look at Trent McDuffie from Washington here. 3 critical factors for cornerbacks in terms of what you're watching that are the most important. How do you grade what you call reactive athleticism?
We obviously want good athletes at every position, but when we talk about reactive athleticism, we're really talking about the ability to mirror movements of receivers. You know, that's not only physical, but it's mental as well. It needs to have the instincts. You know, John talked a lot about the instincts and kind of the FBI there, but the instincts, the intelligence to read the receiver and basically know what's going to happen before it actually does. So, you know, he's coming off the line and he can basically see what is going to be coming before it actually does come, and then being able to read and react to it quickly. So obviously we want good athletes, but good reactive athletes are what we want all throughout the process of basically all the entire defense. And I'm sure John will talk about it here in a little bit with offensive line as well.
I like play speed, because I feel like you watch these combines and you see these guys in shorts running, but I feel like game speed, play speed is different. Tell us about that factor.
Yeah, John mentioned this as well, but with play speed, it's a critical factor for some positions. It's positional for some others, and then not on the board for some others as well. But corner, probably one of the more important ones. You know, for the most part, pretty simple here. It's looking to see how fast they play on the field. But not so simple aspect, like you kind of mentioned right there, is a lot of people mix this up and confuse this with timed and 40 speed. Play speed and time speed are two different things. You know, just because somebody goes out there and runs a 4.3 this weekend at the combine doesn't mean that's how fast he plays on the field. So obviously with the combine happening this weekend, it's probably a good idea to bring this up. But many of the combine tests, to me, they're really just for show. Whenever you're looking at time speed, it's an old school way of thinking, and not much of it translates to what you're going to see on the field. But whenever you're talking corners, you're talking corners and 40, that's probably one of the more important position test combos that you want to watch this weekend. It's great if they're fast, but it can really hurt you if they're not fast. So whenever you get into watching corners, when you start getting into those high 4.6 range, the 4.7 range, you know, or slower for a corner, it's going to be really hard to make it at the NFL level.
It's amazing what a 1/10 of a second can do to a guy's draft stock. And then ball skills, the other one.
Yeah, another relatively simple one here. We want defensive backs who can break up passes and force turnovers. They're able to be in position, they can time throws, and they play the ball at the catch point, you know, not only just breaking up passes, but they're able to force a turnover, create the interception, and get the ball back.
That's straightforward. How does McDuffie rate in these three factors?
Yeah, when we start with, you know, reactive athleticism here, smart and fluid, very athletic, allows him to be a good reactive athlete here. Smooth in his back pedal, flips his hips cleanly, transitions quickly, and has the burst and acceleration to close on receivers and meet them at the ball and make plays. So I have him as a 6 for reactive athleticism. Going into play speed, I have a 7 there, saying he's very good at the NFL level. Quick in short areas, but has the long speed to keep up with just about anyone and the closing speed to easily make up ground if beaten early. And then from ball skills, I have a sufficient grade of 5. It's not completely his fault. He's really good in opposing teams, and quarterbacks knew that as well, you know, throughout his college career. Wasn't tested often, but when he was, just didn't show a ton of on-ball production. Up against bigger receivers, can get boxed out a little bit, has a tough time really biting through the body to the ball. And a lot of his passes were really short. They were in front of him, where he was able to use his quickness and transition ability to really break up on those limit run after catch abilities. So, you know, wasn't tested a lot often down the field. I think he's going to be just fine whenever you start to see it more at the NFL level, but more sufficient in that aspect more than good right now.
So 6, 7, and 5, the three grades in those factors. There are 12 positional factors. We're not going to get into each of those here. A bunch of them are straightforward. Off man, press man, slot coverage, things that essentially relate to some of the things that you just talked about. And then I feel like we go back to the ESP thing again. What's FBI?
Yeah, we've talked about that a couple of times already today, so I'll keep it somewhat short. But yeah, your football intelligence. You know, we're trying to figure out his instincts, his anticipation, the ability to diagnose a play before it happens, reacting quickly to what they're seeing, and just playing smart out on the field. So, you know, obviously being smart player, having the instincts, you know, John mentioned, you know, is it always instincts? Is it always intelligence? Is it film study? It all kind of combines together a little bit. But just being able to play smart and playing reactive and instinctual out on the field. And with McDuffie, I have a 6 for his FBI grade. So a good grade at the NFL level.
Talk about the different coverages and how McDuffie stacks up in each of those.
Yeah, beyond the critical factors, one of the things that we want to assess is how a guy can play in each coverage style. If man, is he better off man or is he better in press, you know, up at the line of scrimmage? How is his zone coverage ability? Does he have the awareness and disruption of guys coming through his area? You know, ideally, you're looking for players that excel in man coverage and more specifically off man, because those are the guys that are usually your better athletes. They show good fluidity, good transition skills, good mirror ability to stay with receivers as they, you know, out of the top of their routes. And then does he have the ability to play in the slot, or is he an outside only player? So for McDuffie, I think he's very good off man corner. He's got the transition, the reactive athleticism to play off man, can play both outside and in the slot if needed. He can be effective in zone if asked to as well. But for me, he needs to improve a little bit with his technique and his strength to be able to play in press at the line.
What's the hardest thing to evaluate for someone like him?
Yeah, for corners, I'll give two things. And it's not always apparent with just all corners, but one is ball skills. I know we mentioned this earlier, but you know, I sort of mentioned it with McDuffie as well. You know, some of the better corners in college don't get tested often. So sometimes it's hard to really see how good they can be at the catch point, especially down the field if they aren't tested very much. And the second, you know, what they're asked to do in college and how it translates to the NFL. So some college defenses just sit back in a cover four. They just sit back in zones where the corners maybe bail off the line and rarely do much more than just stay in their quarter of the field. So those instances, as well as the ball skills, make it a little bit harder and more difficult to really see what a guy can do and really if he's good or bad at it sometimes.
So you have a lot of info on McDuffie. You've sounded very high on him in some places and more modest in other places. How do you weight it, and or how do you get to his number?
Yeah, we're weighing, again, all the critical factors a little bit higher than the rest, taking everything into account, though. Looking at the type of scheme he fits into is important as well. Obviously, it's much easier to find a zone corner. You know, it's hard to find those truly athletic corners that it can excel in man coverage at the NFL level. But I have him as one of the top corners in the class. I gave him a 6'8 grade, high-end three-down starter, solid player at the next level. And, you know, he's going to be starter on the outside, fitting best in that off-man scheme, and can slide into the slot as well if he needs to.
So if your team gets him, you should be pretty happy. A 5.4 to 8, again, is the general scaling for this. If your upper-end players are your 7s and your high 6s, and then it scales down from there. As you said, we've said with some of the other guys with Walker that they might not be at the top, but they're in certain tiers, and put McDuffie in a pretty good tier there. Let's close this out looking at our fourth of four, Ikem Ekwonu, who often goes by Icky from North Carolina State. I saw a reference on social media to him and the Icky Shuffle. Now I know why. Before we go anywhere with him, I think they're going to ask what position he'll play. He's an offensive lineman. John, how do we handle that?
For most players, it comes down to body type and then your strengths and weaknesses. Typically speaking, your tackles are a bit taller and longer, more athletic, playing in space a bit more. Guards are a bit stouter and stronger. Centers can be smaller than that, but they need high awareness and leadership, and typically snapping experience is a big aspect there. You need to have done it to be able to protect somebody there, but when you get to the more elite prospects like Ekwonu, who meets a lot of the qualities for a tackle and a guard, those are the two positions that people are talking about, it can get tricky. I personally believe that if a player's grades are similar, would be similar at tackle or guard, I typically stick with them at tackle because it's a more premier position, more valuable position in the NFL. Left tackle is valued higher than a guard would be. If I think that he can be at a high-end tackle, even if maybe there's a slight chance that he's a bit higher, maybe a bit safer if you bump him inside, I think he deserves every chance to get the opportunity to stick outside at tackle, which again, I think he can be a very good left tackle in the NFL. There's always the chance that he could bump inside and be a safe player at guard. You've got a very good guard there, no issue. But he deserves a chance to stick outside for sure.
We can really get in the trenches here as we look at offensive linemen. He's a good one to go through the critical factors with and kind of explain what we're looking at and then how we evaluate him. So for an offensive lineman, what is, quote, reactive athleticism?
Something that Coop just talked about for cornerbacks. It's something that we always love talking about in scout school that might surprise people. The similarities between the biggest and smallest players on the field, cornerbacks and offensive linemen, have a ton of similarities. The main reason for that would be reactive athleticism. The reason why those two positions are so difficult to be really good at in the NFL or at any level is because so much of what you're doing snap to snap is being done moving backwards. It takes a special kind of athlete to move backwards and still have the athletic abilities to react to what your opponent's doing. Those are two positions where even though they're offense and defense, you have your assignment, but there's a lot of adjusting to what your opponent is throwing at you, as opposed to vice versa when you're just attacking or you know what route you're going to run, things like that. So yeah, as Coop said, it's essentially your mirror and match movement skills. For an offensive lineman, it would be adjusting to lateral quickness in short areas, very tight spaces. You can be a premier athlete, but if you need to be able to adjust and redirect and have the quick footwork and instincts and anticipatory skills to make very quick opening your hip movements, very tight spaces. Things happen a lot quicker in the offensive line. When a player starts an outside rush and bumps inside, when he slants off the line, move up to the second level, adjusting to things when players get faster. Reactive quickness in a phone booth, essentially, is what you're looking for offensive linemen.
And it sounds like you got to watch really closely on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What's anchor and play strength?
So that'd be your combination of your ability to not only physically overwhelm your opponents with your strength when you're on the attack, essentially, but also negating their strength with stoutness when you're moving backwards. So kind of run game versus pass game, all encompassing grade there in terms of your strength. Your anchor ability in pass pro is really important. It combines a few other things. A lot of these factors, critical and positional, will bleed over from one to the other. There are situations where for a running back, you're going to have players that are good at contact balance and power. It's going to be tough to be really good at power and have really bad contact balance in some situations. There's going to be some things that bleed over from one to the next. And there's definitely some factors in other areas like your flexibility, your footwork that would affect your anchor ability. But this is just your grade strictly for your strength on the attack and on the defense overwhelming upper body, lower body grade.
And then the third is what we call body control.
Yeah, for offensive linemen, it's your ability to keep your pads and weight over your toes, your balance when you change directions, your blocking recovery at awkward angles, when you're engaged, your ability to stay square always. That's something we talk about. And then just generally staying on your feet, a big thing that we always look for. You do not want linemen that are always on the ground unless they're on top of someone else that they've already put there. So balance issues are a big thing. Don't want guys that are constantly tripping over their feet, can't get up to the second level, can't move laterally in zone. Just guys that can't move, guys that are on the ground too much, unless they're putting someone there with them.
So you need 300-pound guys that have good footwork, and you hope that you can find guys like that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do. We talked about running backs earlier being a dime a dozen. Offensive line is definitely not that. It's a tough thing to find.
So essentially, you want a 300-pound guy who has the nimbleness of a dancer.
Yeah, absolutely. A dancing bear is a term that gets thrown around a lot with light-footed guards, maybe a big round guard, but a guy that can move really well. It's a very difficult thing to find a guy who's 6'4", 300 pounds, and has the requisite strength, athletic abilities, the smarts, the toughness, that whole combination of things that you're looking for in the NFL. Those guys do not grow on trees. And so you maybe have the guy that has the size, but he has nowhere near the athleticism, or maybe he's got the athleticism, but it's tough to put on that weight and strength to meet those qualities. So it's definitely a position that's tough to find, which is why it might be the toughest part of evaluating offensive linemen.
There are 12 positional factors. We're not going to get into them too much other than to just ask, which ones best represent a guy's ability to do what he does without committing a penalty? Because I feel like as a fan, that's the most important thing. I want to know if my guy's highly penalized or not.
Yeah, you hear people always say that there's a hold on every play. I don't really subscribe to that. I think offensive linemen deserve a bit more credit than that. But for sure, I mean, there's a lot of technical aspects that you need to play offensive line on top of the size and the athleticism and everything. And again, things bleed over. But two of the more technical positional factors would be hand use and footwork. Hand use is not just how active your hands are. That's really important, your ability to replace, latch, and constantly readjust them. But it's also your accuracy in your first punch. That's always something that I look for. Hand placement, keeping your elbows tight, striking the chest instead of grabbing out wide, that would lead to holds. And then on top of that, footwork as well. That's your upper body technical ability, and then your lower body technical ability, the foot quickness, technique to engage and move before contact and then through contact, keeping your feet moving with a square base, choppy, powerful steps, also a smooth and technical kick slide and pass protection. Going back to the dancing bear thing, it's always kind of trying to find guys that are light on their feet in their movement skills to a certain point, and then have really thick, powerful, heavy feet as they're driving, and maybe you can hear them, plant them in the ground. So if you're on the sideline watching a game or watching practice or anything, you can hear guys dig and drive into the ground as they're making contact. But being able to, you can also see guys that are 320 plus pounds that are really light on their feet and their movement skills beforehand. So there's kind of a balance to strike there.
Let's get right into, how does Aquano fare?
So strengths and weaknesses for him would be excellent finisher, relentless snap to snap. He's a pest through the whistle. He really annoys guys. He's for all intents, as far as I can tell, he's a very nice guy off the field, but he is a pest snap to snap. And he finishes guys regularly at the end of plays through the whistle, always toes the line really well on that aspect. Not a dirty player, but just definitely gets on the nerves of defenses for sure, because he just keeps coming at you. His grip strength is very good. Once he latches on, he's got some placement issues that I'll talk about, but once he latches on strongly, the play's over. He gets you in his mitts and it's over. And he's really impressive as a zone blocker. He's a really big body, but his movement skills laterally, especially in zone, NC State runs a lot of wide zones to his side of the field. That's kind of their staple running scheme. He leads the way moving laterally, and he's dominant. Negatives would be keeping consistent width in his base through contact. He sometimes gets a bit too wide when he's anchoring, gets a bit too narrow when he's moving forward in the running game. He isn't the longest tackle on tape. That's something that I'm interested to see here coming up in the combine, how he measures in, because it feels like he might have a bit shorter arms on that end of things, which isn't necessarily a huge issue, but he combines it with some hand placing inaccuracies at first contact. And then despite being a ridiculous athlete overall, I think he's going to test phenomenally well. He comes from a track background in his family. He's going to have a big showing at the combine this week, I'm sure. But that short area reactive athleticism that we talked about isn't as sudden as you'd like for a premier left tackle. Some of the real athletic, skinnier, kind of your prototypical left tackles, he's maybe not that. I think he's a great athlete in space, moving around and stuff. But that real short area, tight spaces stuff, can be a tick behind what you maybe want from a blindside protector.
So there's so to speak, there's nothing wrong with being like the 10th best in the NFL, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Especially, like I said, with running backs being a dime a dozen, offensive linemen are at a big premium. So those guys are valued extremely highly.
Going back to the dancing analogy, can he dance?
Absolutely. Yeah. You see him moving laterally, like I said, in zone, moving up to the second level, just how he moves in space for a guy who's about 6'4", 320 pounds, the power that he plays with, you don't necessarily expect to see somebody who's knocking guys to the ground regularly and also just moving laterally and kind of crossing his feet and just the overall athleticism. Like I said, crazy track background in his family. So it makes a lot of sense.
So what's his overall grade?
So based on, again, we talked about some of his strengths and weaknesses, we talked about how the premium of offensive linemen in the NFL, it's tough to find them. If you're not a sixth level or better in a lot of those traits, you better be sufficient across the board and then elite in some others. I think that's more where he is. It's tough to find guys that are sixes across the board. That's always what you're aiming for, but he's definitely not deficient anywhere, which is what you're looking for. He's sufficient across the board at least. And then he's got some key weaknesses that he needs to refine a little bit that I mentioned, but some of those elite traits, the finishing ability, the power, the movement skills, the overall combination, like I mentioned earlier, of NFL standards of having that size, but athleticism, strength, the smarts, and the toughness, he meets all that. He's a rare combination of all that stuff. So I have him with those weaknesses in terms of being a left tackle in the NFL. I think he's a hair below that 7-0 elite level grade. I feel much safer putting him at a 6-9 for me. Being a left tackle, because I am projecting him to left tackle, I think there's a chance that some could call him a 7-0 guard. I think he could stick at guard. A lot of the weaknesses that I mentioned would be mitigated moving inside. I think maybe some of his strengths would be a bit mitigated inside, but I think he'd be a really safe guard. I just think that there's so much of a rare combination of traits there that I want to give him every chance to stick at left tackle. And a 6'9 left tackle is a very valued player, maybe even more so, probably more so than a 7-0 guard. So that's my grade on him right now. We'll see how he fares at the combine, but I feel pretty good about it.
All right. So, John, to wrap up, we just talked about Ekwonu. You feel very strongly about him. You feel very good about him. 6'8", 6'9", somewhere in there. That's very, very, very good. We talked about Walker before. Just to recap, you said on him
6'6". Yeah, just below the 6'7", that 6'7", to 6'9" tier, but still a very strong player moving forward.
And the two guys you talked about, Pickett first.
Yeah, right on that 6'7", 6'6" border. We'll see where I end up on him. But you know, I like him. I just don't think he's going to be that top tier guy.
And again, comparisons to last year's scale, like that's where Mac Jones essentially was in the 6'6" area. And then McDuffie.
Yeah, I like McDuffie a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out and is our number one corner. But I think he's in that top two or three discussion for sure. And possibly that top 10 in the draft this year.
Let's close by just answering one or two other questions. What are the differences between evaluating a star and a more average guy?
Yeah, it can be tough. Whenever you're watching guys, you know, you're talking about a guy, you know, a 5'9 is basically your top backup at a lot of positions. And then, you know, a 6'5 is maybe your first and second down starter type of player. So there is a little bit of gap in between there, but some positions, maybe it falls straight from 6'5 to a 5'9 or 6'5 to a 6'2 to a 5'9. You know, just because we have grades all between, you know, 5'4 and 8 or 9 doesn't mean that every single decimal point is used for every position. So, you know, trying to find that cutoff for certain players can be difficult. You know, a lot of it goes back to, you know, your quality of competition. You have to try to watch the guys and try to get the most NFL worthy plays out of them, you know, when you're watching the film. And then you have to look at consistency. A lot of the average guys, maybe they were good in college, you know, over the entirety of the season, but they just didn't show a lot of consistency. Whenever you're looking at the higher end players, they're showing those good level traits at a high level a lot of the time. So those are the biggest things that you're really looking for. You're looking for consistency throughout your traits.
And then when we do this, we just actually went through a class here at work about the subject of unconscious bias. And I'm wondering, John, just to wrap things up here, is there a tendency to give a guy from a school like Alabama the benefit of the doubt because of where he's from, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's tough not to in a lot of cases. You always hear the term, don't scout the helmet, which can be difficult to do in a lot of cases. You see the Alabama helmet, any of the big tier programs, and you automatically assume that they must be at least a certain level of player to get to that point. which definitely isn't always true. We've seen it time and time again. That's the thing that makes it easier to not have that unconscious bias, is because we see it so often, players from small schools excelling, players from big schools not making it. That being said, there is a level of understanding that being a defensive back for Alabama, being coached by Nick Saban, and having that level of schematic coaching and technique and understanding, and the kind of the pipeline of certain positions that have come from certain schools consistently under the same schemes, offensive linemen at Iowa or Wisconsin, wide receivers lately at Ohio State, defensive backs at any number of schools that claim to be DBU. There is a level that can be consistent there. But again, like coaches change, schemes change, everything changes. So you really just have to evaluate the player on his own. Because yeah, we see players from small schools all the time. You're looking at players from all levels, and how they compete against players at similar levels is a huge thing you're looking for. You're looking at it. I was doing a smaller school player yesterday who played a school smaller than him and dominated. And then the very next week played a Power 5 school at a jump up in competition from FCS and also dominated. And I could tell that guy felt it just as much as the small school kid definitely felt it the day before. So that's what you're looking for, is no matter the competition, guys step up. Doesn't matter what helmet he's wearing, what helmet is on the other side, he shows up consistently.
One thing too that you'll see as well is a lot of guys will kind of ding a guy because of previous players at that position from that school. So maybe, you know, all the quarterbacks at Alabama, they haven't done anything. So then this guy is going to get blamed because, like, hey, the guys before him haven't done anything coming out before. So I think people are going to look at him a little bit lesser and a little bit differently. Instead of, you know, actually truly evaluating him, they're trying to evaluate what came before him. And I think that's, you know, obviously we don't want to go that route, and that can get you in trouble a lot. But that's something that you hear here and there as well.
Cool. The website will be up at the end of the month. We will have plenty of NFL draft coverage over the next 6 to 8 weeks or so. Looking forward to it. This was as deep a dive as we could do on four players and the process by which we evaluate them. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This wraps up today's episode. We will do a statistics-based episode a little later on. We hope you tune in for that. You can follow Coop on Twitter at ncoopdraft and John on Twitter at TheRealJohnTodd, T-O-D-D. Also their boss, Matt Menacharian, at Matt Mano, and the SIS football account at football_SIS. For Nathan Cooper, John Todd, and our producer, Justin Stein, I'm Mark Simon. Thank you for listening to the Off the Charts Football Podcast.